And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. With you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We were going to preview Clemson's prospects on today's program, so our interview will be coming up in a little bit. But let's start off with some Giants news. And yesterday, the Giants made it official. Paul, Keenan Robinson has re-signed with the team, who played the middle linebacker spot, was very effective in coverage. He split time with Kelvin Shepard, but he saw a lot of time on the field given all the passing down situations that the Giants faced.
I think the number of snaps was near 70% last year. And, you know, with everybody going to those sub-packages more and more frequently, it became obvious that his athleticism and ability to get downfield, you know, as many as 20 to 25 yards and be able to break up passes and stay with guys, that became such an important element for the Giants. And so, fortunately, you know, he was able to come to a terms on a deal. And, you know, again, this is now, I was talking to Lance about this the other day. You talk about the top 13 guys on this defense in terms of snap count. They're really 13 starters because Shepard and Robinson kind of split time, and DRC as a nickel is kind of a starter. That means 11 of the top 13, quote, starters on defense are back. Can't say enough about that.
Well, continuity, and especially with the way the defense performed in 2016, I think that's been the goal of the organization, to make sure that they can bring the nucleus back. And then specifically, let's focus on the linebacking core. How about the fact that Keenan Robinson and Kelvin Shepard split time in the middle, but Robinson, based on the percentage of snaps, was the guy that was on the field more often than not. And then also, you still have Jonathan Casillas in the mix, as well as Devon Kennard. So you're talking about the linebacking core is back in the mix, as well as three-quarters of the defensive line. So with respect to the front seven, that group, which obviously set the identity and tone of the defense last season, to have that group back, for Spags to know he's got the framework back, and then maybe you're working in a couple of few new complementary pieces, that's a huge asset.
Well, you'd like to believe the natural progression for B.J. Goodson in his second year would be at least he would challenge for some snaps, if not actually earn some. It's not out of the realm of possibility. He could wind up being either a starter or a significant role player in year number two. I can't say enough about the Giants having the secondary intact. They got the front four almost intact. And now the linebacking situation, for the most part, they've got the framework intact as well. To me, it was a top five defense last year. I like to say top 10 because I'm trying to give room for people who want to dispute it, depending upon what stat you want to look at, points allowed, yardage allowed, whatever. Certainly, I think they were a top five defense, and there's no reason why they shouldn't be again.
One of the things that to me was interesting that Keenan Robinson mentioned when he spoke with Giants.com is the fact that he was patiently awaiting to see what would happen with JPP's deal. And even though he did perhaps go on a few other visits, he always said, listen, if the Giants can make things work, I would like to return. And not every player, not every team has that luxury for things to work out that way.
No, some guys want to jump at that first phone call and they're going to be gone in a quick heartbeat, or for that matter, they're just going to say, look, I'm going to take something that I know I can get my hands on, as opposed to a promise that we're going to try to work things out later on down the road. So, and then, again, another benefit of the Giants being able to get JPP back into the fold. Not only is he here to continue with his Giants career, but the way the things worked out, it also opened up room for Keenan.
Which is why I always said that once JPP's contract would get going, it was essentially the start of free agency for the team, because that would give them the flexibility to essentially, obviously, make ways to pursue other free agents and so forth.
I'll catch you in a bit.
Yes, we will catch you in a bit indeed. Lance Meadow with you here. Paul Dottino will be rejoining me in a bit in terms of our preview across the Giants landscape. But in the meantime, we're going to shift gears to college prospects, because obviously with the draft on the horizon, the big theme on the program is to get you set for perhaps who the Giants may go after with the 23rd overall pick, but also just give you an idea of some of the top prospects across the country. And today's focus is going to be on the Clemson Tigers, and kind enough to give us a few minutes is Mickey Plyler, radio host on WCCP-FM The Roar in Clemson, South Carolina, and he has covered Tigers athletics, including the football program, for more than 25 years. Mickey, Lance Meadow with you here on Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything's great, Lance. I hope you guys are well in the Northeast. Last time I was in the Northeast, the ACC Championship tournament It was 65 degrees. I leave, you guys get a blizzard. So I need to get back up there and bring you some warm weather.
Well, Mother Nature continues to play games with us, Mickey, because today it's now back in the mid-30s, and the winds are very high, and we're freezing our you-know-what off. So I'm glad that you checked in on the weather. But you took the warm weather back down south with you, so thank you very much for that. We appreciate that.
I'll bring it soon. How about that? Bring it back.
Sounds good. Well, let's start with the Clemson prospects. This is a deep group. I want to start with Mike Williams, the wide receiver, who missed the 2015 season because of the neck injury, returned. He did not run at the combine, Mickey, but he did run at Clemson's pro day. And speed, whether or not it would transition to the football field, was obviously a big question mark. How much did his combine performance, you think, help solidify what you've seen during the course of the regular season?
You know, I'm an old school guy, which really means I'm old, Lance. But, I believe on the field stuff. The underwear Olympics are great. And there's a reason for them. Look, I respect the industry. I respect the professional scouts know much more than I. But still, you got to be able to play the game. And Dabo Sweeney, and speed is ultra important. I think Williams has enough speed to compete at the next level. Comparing him to the Nuke Hopkins of the world that's come out, he's not Sammy Watkins fast. Now, Sammy's been hurt a bunch so far. But the former Clemson receivers, he's faster than DeAndre Hopkins. He's not as fast as Sammy Watkins, but he's fast enough. Dabo Sweeney said the other day during the pro day that they had two rules when it comes to Mike Williams. If he's single covered, he's wide open. If he's double covered, they better be pretty close because he's still open. You know, he gets himself open because he's got those basketball skills, those great ball skills. The other thing is, you know, those combines, those numbers are great. But what did he do against Malik Hooker? What did he do against Lattimore? You know, what did he do against Alabama's, first-round draft picks that they've got in their secondary? And quite frankly, he was dominant. Against the best competition, he was dominant. In the bigger games, he was dominant. Against South Carolina, the arch rival here, he had three touchdowns in the first half. He's a big physical receiver. He's a man, and strong hands, a little bit of Alshon Jeffrey maybe. You know, Alshon's not a 4.45 guy, but a great player in the league, and he reminds me an awful lot of that because of those strong hands. That ability on the deep ball to make the adjustment to the ball in the air, whereas the defensive back's not quite as well at doing that. Mike does a great job of that.
And winning those 50-50 battles obviously is key. You alluded to his size, 6'4", extremely attractive. And I'm with you, that old-school philosophy. It's more about what you do during the course of the regular season than necessarily a bunch of stats that pop up during the combine. I did allude to the fact that he missed the 2015 season, Mickey, because of the neck injury. How much of a concern is that moving forward? I mean, that's a serious injury, fractured his neck. You know, thankfully, he was able to get back on the football field. Is he behind that, or is that something that NFL teams are going to have to be somewhat concerned about in terms of him re-aggravating?
I don't think there's any more concern than the average player now, and I know this. I know the team, orthopedic doctors and doctors at Clemson, I know Dabo Sweeney very well. They would never have put the kid in any more jeopardy than the average player there. Mike looked strange because he wore a neck brace for a long time. They kept it on even longer, a hard brace and a soft brace. He's got a long neck anyway, and a lot of kids joke with him about it. But they probably were overcautious with him. He wanted to maybe try to play in the playoffs of his junior year. They didn't bring him back. They wanted to be very cautious and make sure his health, because, look, that's paramount. You know, we've seen too many times where, you know, especially a spinal cord or neck-type injury. I don't think that's any more of a concern than anybody else in this draft.
The other notable offensive weapon that Deshaun Watson utilized throughout the course of this season is the tight end, Jordan Leggett. And he also has just as much size as Mike Williams, 6'5", became a big playmaker. Where does he stand out to you in terms of – this is an extremely deep tight end class, Mickey, that I'm sure you're aware of. What sets him apart from perhaps some of the other prospects that play his position?
Well, I mean, as you guys know, the game has changed so much, and we're not asking guys to block, and that's a good thing, because Leggett really, I joke on my show about saying that he ought to try it. It's like asparagus. If he tried it, he might like it. So he's not going to block anybody. You know, that's not why they're going to pay him that money. Same thing with O.J. Howard. We watch all those guys now. He is extremely good at catching the ball, not necessarily the leaping ability, but his catch radius. He caught a ball on the next to last play of the national championship game that I don't know how many tight ends in the country would have caught. Great hands, a competitive kid that he needed to come back. And he was one of those guys, like a lot of guys that thought about coming out. He needed to come back. I thought he improved. He's stronger, a little better blocker, but a guy that stretches the field, off the line tight end a little bit, on the line tight end. His versatility probably more than anything else. A great job of I don't know if about a great route runner. You don't hear that about tight ends, but knowing where to sit down in the zone, knowing where the sticks are, those kind of things. A little bit of intangibles. At the college game, It really took a lot of pressure off of the running game, off of the wide receivers, because, you know, he occupied those safeties. It was a terrible matchup for linebackers. The size matters was a matchup for him against the safeties. I think that he's not a first-round guy, maybe not a second-round guy, but he'd be a steal. I know the Giants are looking at tight end. I thought I've seen that.
Yeah.
I think he'd be a steal in this mid-round guy. He's not the toughest kid in the world, but, you know, you look at the tight ends in the league right now, and these aren't the great blocking tight ends we know in the past. These are pass-catching guys. I think he fits right into that.
Togo and Mickey Plyler, radio host on WCCP-FM, The Roar in Clemson, South Carolina, covers Tigers athletics, including the football program, which is what we're focusing on right now. You mentioned that he's more of a receiving tight end, and perhaps the Giants would be interested in a tight end. The thing is, Mickey, if they are interested in a tight end, they may be looking for somebody who is a little bit more stronger in terms of their blocking. So that will be interesting to monitor. But one of the things that I came across when people write about Leggett, similar to O.J. Howard, is wondering whether or not there's the love of football. And I thought that was interesting. You've been around him. You've seen him. You know, sometimes when you look at a player, they're maybe not ultra-aggressive, as you mentioned, and people make assumptions. Is there anything to be concerned about that the passion is not necessarily there, the love affair with football moving forward?
365 days ago, I think that might have been a concern. But, you know, these kids, they mature at different rates. And I'd say that Jordan Leggett matured emotionally maybe as much as anybody. A team guy, a guy that it did become important to him. He was an important option. He was always that important option in his down-the-field passing game, in the vertical passing game that they have here. But the maturity off the field, what kind of teammate he is, and seeing it, he gave a great speech at the national championship celebration about he recognized his position coach, Danny Pierman, his wife and kids, about what they meant to him. I'm not sure if you'd asked me a year ago, I'd have the same answer. But I do think that he is, and he matured a little bit later, but that would not be a major concern in my mind. Because, you know, guys get money, and who knows? You know, that's what the crapshoot all this is about, how they handle success. Well, Jordan Leggett had a lot of success, and I think that now he's more equipped to handle that.
Talking with Mickey Plyler, who covers the Clemson football team on WCCP-FM, The Roar in Clemson, South Carolina. My partner in crime, Paul Dottino, rejoins me as we move along here, previewing the Clemson Tigers. Well, we focused on Deshaun Watson's two offensive weapons, Mickey, in Mike Williams and Jordan Leggett. I know the Giants may not be necessarily looking towards bringing in a rookie quarterback, but who knows? Maybe Deshaun Watson is around at 23 and they have some interest. A lot of people have had mixed results and mixed reactions to Deshaun Watson's play. This is not a very deep quarterback class. You've seen Deshaun Watson. You've seen him deliver on the biggest stage. In your mind, is there anything to doubt that Deshaun Watson's playmaking ability in college can't necessarily translate over to the National Football League?
Lance, the only doubt I would have is if, you know, seeing it in the past, you know, seeing guys that were can't-miss guys fail, or guys, you know, like a Tom Brady's too good of an example of it. But, you know, a guy, Christian Ponder and E.J. Manuel, if those guys are first-round draft picks, then Deshaun Watson should be the number one overall pick. I know he's not. That's the only thing, is how does it correlate to the next level? I'll tell you this. To me, quarterbacks comes down to several key things. I mean, the arm strength's important. I know you guys see that. I know those combine numbers are important. But what's the physical toughness like? You know, can you sit back there and take a beating? You know, like what Eli, you know, has to do at times. And I know you guys see that. That physical toughness is important. The guy tore his ACL. 2 weeks later, he plays with one leg, basically, and beats his arch rival for the first time in 5 years, 35-14. The mental, the physical toughness of taking a pounding against Alabama. You know, two games against Alabama, he puts up 40 points and 35 points, over 1,100 yards of offense, over 850 yards of passing yards against the NFL-type secondary. The mental toughness is important to me at quarterback. I mean, the kid, look, in the biggest games against Florida State, against Oklahoma, against Ohio State, against Alabama, he proved it. There, no game at the college level now, again, the pro level, no game was too big. No moment was too big. I think what separates him to me is the quick decision-making. You know, quarterbacks having the reads and how fast the game is. He's better than Marcus Mariota, I think, in that he fits it in the tighter windows that you have to do in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But I talked to NFL scout. This was in his freshman year, and he goes, he's one of the best he's ever seen at the anticipation part of it, which I think is a major part of playing quarterback. He doesn't have the rocket John Elway arm. What surprises me is people talk about his size. Well, he's bigger than Mitch Trubisky. I watched Mitch Trubisky play in person. I watched Deshaun Kizer play in person.
Right.
Not to the extent we watched Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson is a much better football player. Besides that, guys, look, putting the guy on your billboards, on your tickets, on your programs, on your television, have him on the radio show, he's the kind of guy. He's a winner. You want to build around him, have a franchise around him. I can't promise you success just because of the nature of the game, but I can promise you, you know, he's going to be the kind of guy to represent your organization. And no finer example of the competitive nature in the biggest games when it had to be done, look at what Deshaun Watson did.
Now, I know that Lance had asked you earlier about Leggett, and certainly the tight end would be a guy who would be on the Giants' radar. I want to ask you about two other guys who, in my mind, aren't necessarily going to be 23. I mean, the Giants are going to be picking 23 in the first round. But Tankersley at corner, you're talking about a six-foot corner with 4.4 speed. He's going to be attractive to a lot of folks. I keep hearing he may be a late first-round pick. I don't necessarily know that he's the Giants' pick there, but he's an interesting prospect for me. Certainly, if he falls down in the second round, I don't know how you'd pass him up because he's got speed and size at a very valuable position. And then later on in the draft, Carlos Watkins as a defensive tackle, to me, could provide some depth, particularly to a team like the Giants that needs some depth on the interior of that defensive line.
Two great points, guys. Tankersley, Mackenzie Alexander came out of Clemson last year. He's bigger. He's more physical. He's a different kind of corner. He reminds me a little bit of Bashaud Breeland with the Redskins, a guy that is more physical that way. You know, I would say the only knock on Tankersley is he gets his hands all over you. You know, in the league, every time I turn on the NFL, I see defensive holding penalties.
Yeah.
He'll have to make an adjustment there. But he's a physical corner that won't have any problem matching up. Speed-wise, it's good. I don't think it's elite speed. I think it's very, very good. But I tell you, besides the physical nature, the one thing he has is ball skills. And he has receiver-type skills that any time, you know, some of the most amazing interceptions we've seen have come from him. I think he's better than Breeland. Different than Mackenzie Alexander that came out of here.
Right.
Late first round, early second. I'll leave that to the experts, but you'll get a physical corner that won't back down from it.
Could he be a safety, you think? You think he could be a safety?
Yeah, I think he could. I think he's physical enough to do that and run support. He's never played it here, but I think he could do that. On Carlos Watkins, he's a rarity in that. Now, I tell you, talk about injuries. He had a car accident after his true sophomore season, or during his true sophomore season. They registered him. It took him a long time to come back. He wasn't the same emotionally. He wasn't the same physically. But he was one that could have came out last year. He didn't. Boy, he had a great year this year. And he's one of those rare guys. He rushes the passer. You know, Clemson's had great pass rushers and the Vic Beasleys and the Christian Wilkins here. And he's got a great one now in Cleveland Farrell you guys will call about next year. But he's a guy that from the interior, he pushes the pocket a little bit. Great quickness. Really solid football player. A middle-round guy that, like you said, creates some depth. But I think he can rush the passer in the NFL, which is, you know, a really great talent from the inside position.
And would be a potential good complement when you think about Snacks playing the other defensive tackle spot for the Giants. It's that type of guy. That's why I brought him up to you. I thought that, quite frankly, there'd be a fit there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he's another one. Clemson prides itself on good kids. They still have some knuckleheads like everybody else. But this is one of those that you really – you don't worry about. You know, money changes kids and all that, but very, very mature. A fifth-year senior, and that's a rarity nowadays. All these young kids are coming out. I worry a little bit. This is a guy 22 maybe years old that's been through it and knows how to prepare. He also played for Dan Brooks, who's a defensive tackle coach here that put the Albert Hainsworth and the Sean Ellis's of the world in the league. And this is one of Dan Brooks' favorites. He knows how to play the game. He'd be a good fit for a lot of teams.
Cool.
Paul, I brought up Tankersley in terms of the corner position. I want to shift over to the safety position, Mickey. Jadar Johnson is another one that's interesting, mainly because he's only been a starter for 1 year, but in the time that he's been a starter, he seems to have been a very opportunistic player. And, you know, that's something that the Giants have focused in on. Darian Thompson, who they drafted last year, he was known for being a ball hawk, somebody that could be that deep fielder. Where do you see Jadar Johnson fitting in at the safety position in the NFL? Is he a free safety? How is he in terms of coming down near the box? What's his ideal spot?
I don't think that he has a problem coming down in the box. And I think he's a pretty sure tackler. He's not a speed guy. I mean, he won't run, you know, the 4.4s. Solid, you know, high 4.4s, high, you know, 4.5 kind of guy. And he's not the biggest. He's not a physical intimidating guy by any stretch. What he brings to the table, though, is extreme intelligence. He's a very, very bright kid, a lot of confidence. But more than anything else, he's a guy that has great range. The Hooker kid from Ohio State, I saw him make one of the best plays I've ever seen at the Fiesta Bowl. with that kind of range. And in preparation, seeing that, I would say Johnson doesn't have that elite range, but he's got NFL range. And on that cover two, the over-the-top coverage of closing down and making those plays when trying to fit it in there, I think you'd really like Jadar Johnson there, a guy that, you know, I think would be a special teams guy early on, work his way up, but another mature, smart kid. That range is, I do think, is NFL range.
I'd like to ask a baseball question. Can I do that, Mickey, before we kiss you off here? I'd like to sneak in a Yankees question. Did Judge ever play down there in the Carolina League in the Yankee farm system before he came up here to the Bronx?
No, we didn't see him. Now, they're down in Charleston there. I'm sure he probably came down that way, but we didn't see him. Charleston's about 4.5 hours from here.
Okay.
Believe it or not, I hate to tell you this, because I'm the biggest Yankee fan.
I know you are, so I figured you would have sniffed him out if he was there.
yeah. But now, I got to tell you, the Red Sox, our team is about 30 minutes away. Their low-A team is here. We never go over there and mess with that one. But hey, I'll tell you something else, guys. There's my producer, Zach Orr, he's a Jersey kid, and every morning at 5:30 in the morning, my ears are filled about Giants this and Giants that and Meadowlands and MetLife, and Eli's going to leave the play. The guy's the biggest one out there. So I hear more Giants down here as much as you guys get up there, probably.
Good stuff. Thanks, Mickey.
Mickey, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Sounds great, guys. Have a nice day.
You too.
You got it. Mickey Plyler, radio host on WCCP-FM The Roar in Clemson, South Carolina, has been covering Tigers athletics for 25 years, gave us a nice picture of some of the offensive and the defensive prospects. The one other guy that we didn't necessarily focus on, but it's important to mention, is Wayne Gallman, their running back, and where he may wind up, because obviously there is some depth at running back in terms of this draft, and you know there are some question marks about whether or not he'd be that big bruiser. Could he run outside?
Probably a third-day pick.
I would say that's probably a good position to pinpoint of where he may be selected.
I don't know that he fits what I believe the Giants need. I mean, especially with what they have on the roster now and what they're reported to be looking at, it still seems to me like the power back is the guy that's missing. And I don't know that he's going to be a power back in the NFL.
He's a tough guy, meaning he'll
tough
fight
guy.
For the extra yardage.
Don't,
but that
please,
mean,
I don't want to disparage him.
And that's why I wanted to emphasize that, because anybody who's watched Clemson run the football, I mean, he's a guy that you don't necessarily want to mess with. Toughness, I wouldn't question. It's just long term, can he be that big bruising back? I think that remains to be
power
seen.
Power backs are more bulky, stocky, wide, short, you know, lower center of gravity, thick, that kind of thing. That's what we're talking about, not toughness. I'm sure he chews nails for breakfast.
With his Cheerios and so forth. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to now open up the phone lines to you, the listeners, you, the callers, if you want to weigh in on a variety of different subjects. But clearly the theme going forward, as we've been telling you throughout the majority of this week, is previewing the top schools that are going to produce the top prospects. So we covered Alabama yesterday, Clemson today, then Washington tomorrow, and we'll continue to move forward with that theme. So by the time the draft comes around, you'll at least have a nice idea of some of the prominent schools and who they're going to be showcasing and so forth.
Yeah, exactly. And what we will try to do is, during the course of every show, when we do our teams, we will try to tell you what's coming up at least tomorrow. We may not go too far ahead because, quite frankly, sometimes it's difficult to juggle all of these guests that we have on. But we're doing our best to try to make sure that in every one of these markets, we're going to a guy who really knows that team and can give us some insight into these prospects, you know, as opposed to, you know, somebody from Montana who may be sitting in a room somewhere and giving you his draft book. Well, you know, that's fine, but we'd rather get into the heart of the situation and find guys who really know what's going on in that locker room.
Absolutely, and that's why I want to give you a well-rounded outlook in terms of schools. We're also making sure that we talk to individuals after they have their pro days, because storylines and narratives change from the combine to the pro day.
We have strategically mapped out a schedule based on those factors, and quite frankly also, I'll give you a great example. Ryan Ramczyk from Wisconsin, we've moved him, Wisconsin, back later on in the schedule than was originally anticipated, because we'd like to get more of a medical update later on in the month.
As close to the draft as possible.
You know, we're thinking about these things.
Absolutely. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's open up the phone lines. Alan is in Brooklyn. Alan, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Hi, how you doing, Paul and Lance?
Hi.
Doing well, Alan.
I have a question for Paul. Have you started to watch tape yet?
Yes, I have.
Okay, I have a friend that works at Temple And Hassan Reddick, he reminds me so much of Kiwi because of his body and his versatility. What do you think between Zach Cunningham and Hassan Reddick?
You know, the thing that, and I have watched some on him in particular, and the thing that concerns me, and I had a guy tweet me a few days ago saying that when he went to Temple, he was originally a corner, apparently, at some point when he got there, but then he wound up, you know, playing down on the line. The question that I have, and it's the question that our Temple analyst gave us about a week or so ago, is that after playing this entire season on the line, he was really very rarely, if at all, asked to drop back into coverage.
Gotcha.
And so now that's a projection. If you're going to draft him to be an outside linebacker, he's going to have to do a lot of that. And now it's up to you to say, can he do that? Because now we haven't gotten a ton of film on it. Cunningham, on the other hand,
he's been a linebacker.
We've seen that. We know what he can do. It's all there on the film. And for that reason, I would probably favor Cunningham. That's not to say that Reddick can't do it, and it's not to say that he'd be a bad pick. It just means you're relying a little bit more on guesswork. And I think at pick 22, when you're picking 23, when you're picking in the first round, I think as little guesswork as possible is the smart way to go.
Unless, of course, they view Reddick as a pass rusher on the defensive line, and given the Giants putting a lot of stock in pass rushers, especially in the first round, that's a little bit more appealing to them. Because I could see, if you're talking about Reddick and Cunningham, I could actually see the team leaning a little bit more towards Reddick because of his ability to play more on the defensive line.
Well, now that comes into play. The question is, how will you use him in the scheme? And see, this is where people talk about continuity in an organization is important. And bear with me a second, because I want to explain this to you. What happens a lot of times in personnel departments, scouts will look at a guy and they'll say, okay, this, 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 and this, and they write everything up. And they're like, okay, but how's the coach going to use him? How is the defensive coordinator want to use the player? And the defensive coordinator may sit down and say, okay, but I need him to do this and this. What do you got on that? And then the scout comes back and goes, well, I didn't see him do any of that. All right, well, now we got to project. And now if there's a disconnect there, you have a problem. If you have an organization that's all on the same page, well, maybe when the scout went to look at the guy and they know what the defensive coordinator probably would do with him, well, now he's thinking more along those lines. And maybe when he's watching practice, maybe if he's looking at other things besides just the game tape, he can find out more, or he can talk to an assistant coach and say, look, what's the story? Why didn't he do more in coverage this year? Is it because you guys and your scheme didn't want him to? Or is it because he can't do it? You see what I'm getting at?
So true. Yeah, you're right.
And that's the kind of stuff you got to get into. That's why, I'll be honest with you, that's why I love what we do when we try to talk to all these people in the different markets who are close to the teams, because they got a better chance of telling you some of that stuff than just some simple draft book that you might pick up at the local stationery store.
Gotcha.
All right, that's my answer. I think Cunningham's a safer pick. That doesn't mean Reddick's a bad pick.
I got one more question, real quick.
Yeah.
I know back in the days, 2007 to recently, Chris Reed was always considered the strongest Giant in the locker room. Who is that now?
Who did you say you thought was
Chris Reed?
Chris Reed.
Yeah.
Was always the strongest in the locker room.
The strongest player, pound for pound. It might be Eric Flowers.
I was going to say, yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you, guys.
All right, Al.
Appreciate it.
One more thing.
Yeah.
Charlie for president? Charlie for president.
Yeah.
I believe I agree with 70% of what he says.
You believe?
Okay.
And we can't
Alan,
get worse than what we have right now.
Alan,
so
I got news
Charles
for you.
For president.
You may be the only person that agrees with 70% of what he says. So congratulations.
Thank
running
you
that
for
fan
the call.
Club. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. That's an interesting question about who the strongest Giant on
well,
the roster.
Chris Snee was when he was here.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
Well, I'm just looking through today's roster.
I would be hard-pressed
to
go against Eric Flowers. He's a big man.
Oh, yes. I think that's
and strong.
A fair description.
Yeah. I'd go there.
Yeah. I mean, just perusing through the roster, he certainly – but you know what? I would not overlook Olivier Vernon. I think Vernon is right up there. I would put Vernon – Flowers is there. I think Flowers is going, but Vernon is neck and neck with him.
Could be. Could be.
And Vernon also has the look. I mean, it's not like you got to build him up.
No.
He's got
– No. He is cut out of stone.
Yeah, Vernon to me may even have an edge over Flowers when it's all said and done. Not that we're going to set up this hypothetical competition, but – Vernon, I would put my vote behind him as well.
I tell you what, why don't you go into the locker room and tell Eric Flowers that you think Vernon
think
is
I'll
as strong as he
one.
Is?
I think I'll pass on that one. I will watch you, though, explain to him what we discussed on Big Blue Kickoff Live, and we'll see where that conversation goes. How about Big is in Trenton. Big, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, Lance?
Hi,
doing well, Big.
Well, I mean, the last caller pretty much stole my thunder. I was going to ask about Zach Cunningham, but I wanted to ask Paul, do you think that Deion Dawkins, do you think he can play right tackle in the NFL?
I'm kind of mixed on that one right now. I look at him, and I think a lot of people think he's going to be a guard. It's probably the safer position for him to play. But I'm not going to write him off and say he can't play tackle yet. He's the kind of guy who I would bring in and I would say, show it to me. I'm not going to say he can do it. I would say he's worthy of a look, and I'd want to see him try in training camp. And I wouldn't rule it out, but I suspect he's probably a guard.
And just for clarification, okay. I'll let you continue, Big, but just in case the audience is lost, Deion Dawkins, he's referring to the offensive lineman from Temple, and Zach Cunningham, by the way, who we were talking about earlier, the linebacker from Vanderbilt.
Correct.
Just in case you want to do more homework or take a look at their highlights. Go ahead, Big.
Yeah, because I looked at Zach Cunningham. I mean, well, you know, I can only look at YouTube, highlights, but I think he's a pretty good linebacker.
Yeah. He's a prospect for sure.
Yeah, he has long arms, so I mean, I would take Zach Cunningham over Reddick, or I mean, I forget the linebacker's name for Temple.
Yeah,
but
Hassan Reddick.
Cunningham over him. But I had to ask just one more question. What do you think about the outlook of the team, like from our free agent move to, we're building a good young nucleus mixed in with veterans. Like, what do you feel actually? Like both of you, this is for both of you too. What do you feel about the team moving forward? Because I feel we're in a good place right now.
Well, I think from a defensive perspective, and we talked about this off the top of the show, and Big appreciate the phone call, they're keeping the defense together. And that's the goal of any NFL team. It's very difficult in the salary cap era to keep pieces like that together.
Well, when they're of high quality.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about – but you know what? Here's the thing about the Giants' defense. You had playmakers at every level of the defense.
Yeah.
So that's what made it even more tougher, I should say, to try to keep this nucleus together because you had guys on the defensive line, you had the linebackers, and then clearly members of the secondary. And, we were talking about all the starters that are going to return and also some of them even behind that are still on rookie contracts. I think that's a positive outlook. As far as the offense is concerned, adding Brandon Marshall – adding Rhett Ellison, fill some voids that they were lacking last year. It remains to be seen how that translates to the football field. But as long as this team has a defense that can remain at the top of the rankings in scoring defense, Paul, you're going to give your offense a legitimate chance to win games. And that's really all you can ask for.
The mix right now says that this team is in position to make a run this year and maybe sometime in the next 2 or 3 years to be in the top half of the mix and to be in the playoff conversation, which would, by the way, coincide with what we believe Eli Manning's productive years still to be. And so that, to me, is why it's so good right now what the Giants have been able to do, because you don't want to, and I don't want to use the word waste, but you don't want to miss out on whatever good years Eli Manning still has to offer.
You want to capitalize on that. And think about this. What was the big difference between the 15 team and the 16 team? If you were to look at the Giants, I mean, Eli Manning in the offense produced plenty at 15. But they had a little bit more extra pressure on them because it was a lot of offensive clinics. Last year, the offense took a dip, but you had a lot of games where you didn't necessarily need your offense to go out and score 30 points every single day. So the question is, can the Giants' offense pick up the pace in terms of scoring this year? That is one of the biggest question marks, I think, heading into 2017. Assuming there's no drop-off on the defense, and I don't think there's any reason to think that that's going to happen.
No, not at all.
If your defense remains stable, then the question is, okay, what can the offense do from a scoring perspective? That's the thing.
Yeah.
Let's head back to the phone line. Sean is in California. Sean, what's happening?
Hey, what's good, guys?
Hi.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Doing well, Sean. What do you got for us?
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I want to talk about the draft. And then, first of all, I wanted to point out, like, all the moves we've been making in free agency. I was kind of shocked. Like, with this whole JPP signing, I'm happy that we signed him. It locks in our three defensive guys, defensive linemen for the next 3 to 4 years. And, like, I was just shocked. And before I get into my point about the draft, I wanted to ask you guys, like, how are we coming across, like, so much, like, money in this free agency? Like, we just signed Geno Smith for, like, a $2 million one-year deal. I don't really get that signing. I know we need, like, a backup for Eli Manning, but can we get that, like, in the seventh round of the draft? Like, I don't see this whole Geno Smith signing. I just feel like that's a waste of money, nothing against Geno Smith. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, I would just warn you of one thing. Nobody outside of Eli Manning has made the team at the quarterback position yet. He's on the team. Is Geno Smith on the team? I'm not sure. Is Josh Johnson on the team? I'm not sure. Those are two veterans who are here. Well, that's it. They're two guys. They're two guys who at the moment are going to battle for the number two quarterback spot. But who knows what happens in the draft? Maybe, and I have no idea, but maybe the Giants come out of the draft and maybe they get a young guy who they really like. Yeah. Maybe something happens and they decide, you know what, this guy's a legit prospect. He's sitting there in the third round, second round. We're not going to pass him up. And maybe that guy has such a good summer that he beats out the two veterans. Maybe it happens.
Well,
I don't know.
No, I think you bring up a good point, and this goes back to your question, Sean. When free agency plays out, you can't guarantee that you're going to get all the players you want in the draft, which is what Paul is just bringing up. So, you know, you can't look at it as if the draft is already mapped out, so all the free agent moves the Giants make is based on who they know they're going to get in the draft. They have no idea who they're going to get in the draft. So right now they're looking at how do we bring in competition behind Eli Manning, and then in the event we find a young prospect, then that could change who we brought in free agency. Remember, you got a 90-man roster in the offseason, and then you cut that down to 53. So just because you're bringing in X amount of guys at various positions does not mean that they're all going to make the final 53. That's how you necessarily have to look at it.
True that. Like, I like how you guys explain it. You guys, I learned so much from just listening and from calling in and all, and I appreciate that. But real fast before I go, I wanted to say I'm so happy that we was able to work out a deal with Robinson and there's talks that we're talking to Jonathan Hankins. But if by any chance, if Jonathan doesn't resign or even if he does resign, I was looking at Caleb Brandy out of Florida. I was thinking if it would be smart for the Giants to draft a defensive tackle in this draft, but then he can be placed in between Snacks and JPP, and then we have a defensive line set for the next 4 years. You know what I'm saying? And if he's the first round pick, you have that fifth-year option. And then, like, say, like, if he's not available, I'll take, you know, if Allen Robinson or Ryan Ramczyk is available at the first pick, you can always turn around and pick two and pick Montavious Adams out of Auburn. You know, he's another 4-3 defensive tackle that could benefit by having JPP and Snacks Harrison right by, in between them two. I mean, like, he can benefit. And hopefully we can grab, like, maybe, like, if you guys can speak of, like, the, like, I know you probably talked about this, but, like for, like, Ingram and, like, for Everett, like, the three tight ends after, like, Njoku's off the board, because I really don't think he's going to drop to 23. If you guys can talk more about, like, the tight ends, and that's about it for me. And then, like, this guy named, like, Alvin Kamara out of Tennessee, I know you guys talked about him on the show, like, his stock is on the rise. And I know you guys don't really like taking running backs early, but for some odd reason, if he actually goes before Christian McCaffrey and McCaffrey falls to round two, and he's there at our second pick, is that a smart pick for us? And I'll take the answer off the air. All righty, thank you.
There's a lot there. All right, I'm going to let you handle the tight end since you just asked about a tight end during the Clemson call. So I'll let you handle the tight ends. I will simply say we've talked about McCaffrey a lot on this show before. A lot of folks think he is going to be a first-round pick in the Giants' vicinity. I think that's certainly plausible, and I think he's going to do a lot for a lot of teams who can use that style of back. I'm not so sure that that style of back fits a hole that the Giants need in their running backs room right now. I think they need more of a power back. And I think that McCaffrey is more of a versatile back who's going to do a lot of things for you on the move. He's got a lot of slashing ability. He's a terrific prospect. I just don't know that he really fits what the Giants need. In terms of Brantley, you mentioned the defensive tackle out of Florida. Run stopper, he's coming out a year early, so I'm interested in what his strength and power quotient is because physically he's not mature to his senior's level. But certainly a legit second-round prospect, and I think you are absolutely correct in terms of the Giants do need to add some depth along the defensive line, particularly at defensive tackle, and especially if Hankins does not come back.
Well, certainly, especially if he doesn't come back, but I think you can make the argument, even if Hankins does come back,
you could still grab.
I think there's room for a young defensive tackle.
Add competition to that mix. I'm a guy like Jay Bromley's been around a couple of years.
Yeah.
It's time. Either he's got to prove that he could take viable snaps, or someone's going to have to beat him out.
Yeah, perhaps if Hankins comes back, you know, maybe you're saying to yourself, we could take a flyer on a defensive tackle in the late to middle rounds.
So you might even go higher.
Well, I mean, like a Carlos Watkins, who we were just talking about at Clemson,
he could be a three. He would be a three.
Bill.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, maybe you don't necessarily need to necessarily go first, second round on that. Then if Hankins doesn't come back, perhaps maybe the urgency and the philosophy changes. But,
right.
You know, that right now is the land of the unknown. With respect to the tight ends, after Howard, after Njoku, you know, Jordan Leggett enters the conversation. We just talked about the Clemson tight end. Questions, though, about his blocking, as Mickey Plyler, who we just had on, highlighted. Evan Engram, who Sean on the line was alluding to, he's the tight end out of Ole Miss. Very good receiver, a vertical threat.
Yep.
You need to look at also the blocking aspect for him. You know, and then there's plenty of other tight ends that are going to be out there.
You know I'm throwing Kittle's name out there, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, he's another one. Gerald Everett from South Alabama is another one. So, you know, there's guys that I think can land to the Giants, you know, all the way going to about the fourth round. And you can say, hey, we're getting a pretty good playmaker.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I heard at the Combine from the scuttlebutt talking to the people out there. They told me this was a very deep tight end class that you can actually find not only receiving tight ends, but you can find guys who block and guys who actually do both pretty well. All three styles of tight ends are available in this draft, and you don't have to go first or second round to get them. So be that as it may.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, Len.
Doing well, Len.
You know, for the first time in a while, I'm going to put MetLife Stadium on my list of late January vacation spots. This is starting to come together.
They're on the right track, aren't they, Len?
You started off the show talking about that defense. You know, for the first time in a long time, the other teams in our division, I think, are looking at us and wondering how they're going to match up. It's really pretty good. The team we were chasing, in fact, we may be ahead of them today, the Cowboys, you know, the big advantage was that run game. We shut them down twice last year, and it looks like we got that same group back. A year more seasoning, a year more of playing together. If we can get Big Hank back, I don't think we really need him, but if we get Big Hank back.
Oh, it'd be nice to have him.
This has been a good off season. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Paul.
No, Len, I don't think there's any question. You have a lot of reasons to be optimistic for an 11-win team, which, by the way, could potentially have a much more difficult schedule this year. And I'm not just talking about the wins and losses of other teams that they'll face, but four West Coast trips, which, depending upon how they fall in the schedule, could have a significant impact. Lance and I just talked last week about how the bye week with the London trip and then the three straight home games really broke well in the Giants' favor last year.
Yeah.
Don't discount. When that schedule comes out, trust me, the coaching staff, especially the coaching staff, is going to be looking at that schedule and saying, okay, now, are there things here, are there landmines in this schedule that are going to cause us some difficulties? Because that can be a factor.
Oh, no question. No. But in that particular case, and I don't want to, you know, downgrade the competition here, the teams that we're playing, but that's not a personnel issue, Paul. That's a whole bunch of other things.
Right. Well, personnel-wise, this roster is upgraded.
I was just talking about the personnel.
No question.
When you lay it out on paper.
The roster is upgraded. It's going in the right direction.
Really, I mean, it looks pretty good.
Yeah, there's no doubt. There are variables that you cannot control. The schedule, yeah, you cannot control. How good the other teams turn out to be, you cannot control.
Injuries you can't control.
Injuries you can't control. That's another great one, Lance. But what you can control, boy, looks like the Giants are going in the right direction. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Oh, wow, yeah. They've, so far, a terrific offseason building off that 11-win season. And I know the schedule wasn't the toughest one, but we still won 11 games.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're getting these people back. And, you know, the bulk of that defense – I mean, you're talking about some guys who are right in that range, the 4 to 8 year range. I know you spoke about this once before, Paul, but, you know, right in that four, and I always think that's the key, you know, your core of the team, right in that 4 year to 8 year range. And they keep bringing in guys who, of course, in free agency, you know, you bring in the guy who's been around 12 years, or you bring in some guy who's in that 4 to 8 range. But you know, the running back they brought in from the 49ers, I mean, this is a guy who's been, you know, he's been around, and I'm saying that positively. I mean, this guy knows what it's like to go through preseason. He knows what it's like to be in a pro locker room. He knows what he needs to do in order to make a roster. Boy, that helps an awful lot, you know, where you're not dealing with only young guys or only some older guys, you know, on the third contract.
Well, Len, it's also
got a bunch of players right in that 4 to 8 range.
It's also
It's pretty exciting for March.
Well, I mean, it's good for competition purposes, too. I think if you bring in veterans, because then if you bring in your draft class, you've got veterans going up against rookies. I think that helps everybody. You were alluding to, by the way, Sean Drone, who is unofficial.
Yeah.
Nothing is official from the Giants' perspective, but just for the audience's sake, that's who he was alluding to.
And do you know why, Len? Yes. There's something that none of us have even begun to discuss because it's way too early to talk about it, but Ben McAdoo's going to be in his second season as a head coach, and trust me, he learned from his rookie season. There were things and pitfalls and situations that he had to go through, and I always say a rookie head coach is no different than a rookie player. He's going to make his share of mistakes. There are going to be things he's going to have to learn, and he will get better at as he continues to experience what it means to be in that chair. So let's not discount that Ben McAdoo may even do a better job.
And let me, if I can, you know, try to build on that from the coaching standpoint. 18, 19, 20 assistant coaches coming back too.
Yeah, continuity.
I mean, it's the same. I think that helps too.
Sure.
He's got that. You know, he's got that same group together. Hey, can I move to Hankins for a second?
Go.
You know, I really don't get it. You know, I've always been positive about Jerry. In terms of, and I've said, if I were an owner, Paul, I think you'll remember my saying this once. If I was an owner, I would really like Jerry Reese to be my general manager, because if nothing else, he spends my money wisely. I mean, he doesn't throw it away. You know, we don't get in a jam every year against the salary cap. I mean, he spends the money wisely. But what's the hold up on Hankins? Well, I mean, what do you think? We're all guessing, but. Yeah, you know what? Well, is it length of contract? Is it amount of money? What do you think the hang up is?
Here's the one thing. The one thing that is different about this situation than some other free agents who you hear about all the time, and I'm not talking about guys at that position. You hear about them taking visits. Hankins, to my knowledge, hasn't taken any visits. Now that usually means that the asking price or the demands, whether it's length, whether it's money, whether it's some other kind of terms, whatever it may be, usually when a free agent doesn't take any visits, that means that other teams aren't even in the same vicinity of what that player's talking about, or at the very least, they would bring him in for an interview. They'd bring him in for a physical. They'd bring him in for a workout and say, look, we want you. We think you're in the ballpark price-wise and demand-wise. Let's see what we can do to talk about this. But if they're not even willing to talk to a guy, if he's not taking any visits at all, chances are that his idea of the market value is probably not close to anybody else's.
Well, and piggybacking off of what Paul just said, Len, what I think you have to understand is if you look at the defensive tackle market this offseason, I don't think it panned out the way that Jonathan Hankins and his reps anticipated. What I mean by that, with the exception of Brandon Williams, the nose tackle, who re-signed with the Baltimore Ravens, not a lot of other guys cashed in. A lot of them took one-year prove-it type of deals. Dontari Poe, who to me was one of the best defensive tackles out on the market, left Kansas City to go to Atlanta because they signed Benny Logan from Philadelphia, and it was this domino effect where a lot of these defensive tackles, they realize the pass rushers are the premium. Those are the ones getting the big money, the long-term deals. We're just going to have to settle for the one-year contracts with incentives, and then hopefully the market changes next season when there may not be a lot of pass rushers out there. So that's what I think Hankins is starting to realize with respect to his outlook. I mean, that's good news for the Giants because the more he stays out there, the more and more perhaps likely it is that he turns back and says, you know what, my best option is to re-sign with the team.
Okay, if you apply the words – prove it to Hankins, and I'm not sure anybody is really talking in those terms. If you were Hankins or his advisors, managers, etc., what would Hankins have to prove, Lance?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what he would have to prove. And I'm talking about if I'm an executive, how I'm viewing Jonathan Hankins. I'm seeing a guy that is very effective and consistent in stopping the run. That's what I'm seeing. But this goes back to the market. They are trying to find defensive tackles every team that is just as consistent in getting to the quarterback as they are in stopping the run. Now, with Hankins, remember, he had that one breakout season where he had seven sacks. The following year, then, all of a sudden, it dipped to zero, and then he also got hurt. So I think if there's any jury still out on Jonathan Hankins, and once again, this is not a knock on him. I think he's an extremely valuable player. I'm just talking about if I'm looking from the outside in, it's maybe I want to see more consistency in getting
that's
to
fair.
The quarterback.
Okay,
fair.
Now,
that,
but
that's
how is I would that look at because, it. Let me just ask you a question. Is that because the other defensive tackle doesn't give us that pass rush?
Well, Snacks actually set a career high in that department this year. Now, his previous career high was only 1.5, so Snacks was not necessarily always known for getting to the quarterback.
I wasn't being negative.
No, I know you weren't being negative. I think,
but
Len,
I'm curious about Snacks, I'm sorry, Hankins, I looked this up. Hankins finished tied for 121st in sacks last year. 121st. So, you know, you're onto something when you talk about not getting to the quarterback. However, less than 20 of those guys, maybe more than 15, but less than 20 of those guys were defensive tackles. In other words, the rush isn't coming from inside, unless you're Donald, McCoy.
Correct.
I mean, unless you're guys like that.
Fletcher Cox, who also is inside at times. So,
there are
significant guys.
So
and those are the reasons those guys get premier deals.
That's my point.
It's not coming from inside.
Yeah.
I mean, the difference between 121 and 80 was like one sack, because you went from 3, which John, with, you know, Big Hank had, to 3.5 to 4.
So, Len, I'm not sure.
You wind
Len,
up going through about 40 guys.
Len,
so
what's your end game?
For 80th. But the point, what do we want out of the guy? I mean, you want a pass rush, but that's not where the pass rush comes from. Unless you're Donald.
Len, here's the thing. Here's the thing. If you're a free agent, player X, and I'm not going to say this specifically about Hankins because it's not fair. I haven't talked to him, and I don't know what he's asking for.
Yeah.
But if you're player X and you're a good player and you're demanding Pro Bowl money, guess what?
Yeah.
It's not about where the coaching staff or the personnel guys grade you as a player. It's about the value that you're providing compared to the numbers that they need to commit to you. No one is saying that Jonathan Hankins is a bad player. That would be just foolish. He's a good player.
Yeah, but
he's not going to Canton.
It really bothers me when I hear Reed and hear, you know, at this point, Hankins needs to take a one-year prove-it contract. Prove what? I mean, I just gave you the sack. What I want to know, how many tackles did the guy have? We don't have to look it up at this point, but how many tackles for loss? How many games did he play? Over a 3 or 4 year period. He had the 1 year where he had the injury. What was it?
He played nine games in 2015. Yeah, that was the torn pectoral. Correct. Last year, he's coming off a season in which he played all 16.
The guy gets up every day and goes out and practices. He comes on Sunday and he plays.
Len, let me say this. I think you would hear of more interest in him around the league, regardless of what numbers he might be asking for, if he had duplicated his 7-sack season of 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But he did not do that this past year. Therefore, the logical assumption is that the numbers he's talking about don't equate to the kind of interest or the kind of high-level production that he had shown in the past. That's the best way I can answer your question.
Okay, all right, and I do appreciate that. Just one more point very, very quickly. I think we, you know, it's easy for a fan to say, oh, he's got to sign this contract and prove it. I mean, like we just talked about Poe going to Atlanta. Was that the thing?
Don Terry Poe, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, on a prove it contract. I think you used the. I mean,
well,
what is
well,
that guy
that's the generic.
What, have
what,
to prove?
I, what I mean
getting,
by.
He's not getting much better.
No, Poe
is what he is.
Of course, Poe is who he is. But what I mean by a 1 year prove it is the player and his reps look at it as, okay, we didn't get the long term structure that we were hoping for. So go to a new team, play for a year, continue to show consistency, and then maybe the market changes next season. Remember, the market fluctuates, Len, every single season. The market is based on what the draft class looks like. If there's depth of defensive tackle, teams are going to be like, why am I going to splash on a defensive tackle?
And there are plenty of them this year.
So that impacts Jonathan Hankins' market in the defensive tackle. Some years you see tight ends get a lot of money. Tight ends didn't get a lot of money this year. Why? Because there's a lot of tight ends coming up in the draft. So when I say prove it, I'm not saying, yes, that the player all of a sudden is an unknown commodity and has to start all over again. It's more of go out there, do your thing, and then hopefully the market changes next off.
Okay, one more thing real quick. I just want to say, I want you guys to know, I'm feeling good. Don't read anything into my comments.
No, but you also want – but Len,
I think late January is going to be a lot of fun.
But Len,
I think we're going to have a lot of fun, guys.
Len,
hey, great show today.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call.
Thank you. Thanks for taking the call.
Not a problem. Thanks for chiming in. Let's head back to the phone lines here as we move along. George is in St. Petersburg. George, what's happening?
First time caller, originally from New York. Went to see my first Giant game in 1964
cool.
at Yankee Stadium against St. Louis. I definitely enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in.
I have to admit, though, that to me it's the offense. It's still the offensive line. And you guys kind of summarized that the last two callers with how many good opportunities there are for defense in the draft. So why wouldn't you guys be looking at an offensive tackle for the first round?
Well, the Giants are going to pick number 23, okay? So what you have to determine is, regardless of your need, what you have to figure out is the offensive tackles who are going to be on the board at 23, okay, and there may be as many as two or three of them, I would think, who have supposed first-round value. Supposed. You have to now determine if when you get to that spot and one or two of those guys is there, are they in your mind good enough to be the 23rd overall pick in the draft? Or are they guys who we're hearing about getting mixed reviews from people at the combine and maybe should not be late first round picks, and then you think you can enhance the depth of your offensive line in round two or maybe even round three because maybe these supposed first round tackles aren't that much better than the other guys who are going to be taken in day two?
But in round two or three, are they available with the quality that you're talking about to be able to become a starter on the right-hand side of
well,
the line
I think,
and have some of the guys be backups?
George, I think the bigger question here, there's an assumption, and a pretty strong assumption for most people I talk to at Indianapolis, that at the combine, there are a bunch of second, third, and fourth round offensive linemen who are going to be make it players in this league and either be quality starters at some point or really good reserves. But when you talk first round, you usually want to think of those guys as immediate plug-and-play guys who can, within a heartbeat, challenge for a starting job and be a blue-chip, rock-solid guy who may even be a Pro Bowl-caliber guy. Now, from what we've heard, it doesn't look like any of the, quote, third or fourth first-round tackles in this draft are quite that player. They're not okay. plug-and-play guys. So if you take that into account, you would understand why a team may not take one at 23.
Okay, you know, that's fair. But I'm also looking for depth. I still think there needs to be a lot of depth.
Right.
You guys mentioned it the other day.
Well, but you can get the depth later is what we're saying.
Yeah, George, I don't
have an opinion. I want to listen to you guys because you guys are the experts.
Well, George, to answer your question, though, with respect to depth, and I can understand, listen, you can never have enough defensive linemen, you can never have enough offensive linemen, but let's just look at the Giants roster on paper right now. They brought in DJ Fluker, you have Bobby Hart and John Jerry, you got three guys that are probably fighting for two spots on the right side.
Right.
You have Weston Richburg, you have Justin Pugh, you have Eric Flowers, Brett Jones is back in the mix, who's a versatile guy.
So let's count it up. That's five starters
and
plus two guys,
seven guys
who are
right
solid
there.
Reserves.
Yeah.
You're going to keep as many as nine.
So there's certainly room. I'm not denying that. But I don't think that if you're looking for depth, George, you have to then take that offensive lineman in the first and second round. For example, Bobby Hart was a seventh-round pick. So, and I'm not saying that you got to go to the seventh round, but I don't think it's a stretch to say maybe you can get an offensive lineman out of the fourth or the fifth round, and then you can get the depth and you can get the guy that you're going to develop moving forward.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. I really do enjoy your show.
Appreciate it, George. Thanks so much for chiming in.
I think that's the thing, Lance. Where are they going to take that additional lineman? Is it going to be round one? Is it going to be two, three, four? I certainly think they will take one. I would be very surprised if the Giants come out of this draft without an offensive lineman, especially a tackle.
Wasn't last year the first time in Giants history that they didn't take an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman in the draft,
right.
if memory serves me correct?
Right.
So, I mean, I highly suspect that that's going to continue going into this season.
And again, we see maybe seven spots in that offensive line room that look like they're going to be for real. They're going to be spots. Five starters, two guys who lose out as starters. Brett Jones is not going to unseat Richburg, obviously, and the loser of that right side battle. So that's seven spots. That means there is plenty of room for competition at the other two. You could take two offensive linemen in the draft, as far as I'm concerned. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, but also keep in mind, the two guys that essentially fall into the backup role, you're probably going to have versatility out of both of those positions because Jones, we know, could play center and guard.
Right.
And then if Hart or Fluker, I mean, Jerry is a guard, but if Hart or Fluker doesn't win a starting spot, then you have somebody that plays guard and tackle.
Yes.
So you essentially have three positions covered between two backups, mm-hmm. and that's obviously something that's important as well. But I would agree with you. I think there's room to bring in a young offensive lineman, but I don't think that you can say if you're the Giants, you know, we need an offensive lineman or we believe the depth chart is important, so 23 is coming up, and now let's just grab the offensive lineman.
Right.
You want to maximize the value of the 23rd overall pick, especially if we're talking about within context that this team could go out there and pick up where it left off last year. Therefore, you want to add another playmaker to the mix that's going to help you get to the playoffs again.
Isn't this quite strange for me to be involved in a conversation that says don't necessarily take an offensive lineman automatically in the first round?
That's rare and unique. Yes, there's a first for everything, though, on this program.
You know, I'm just not going to automatically do it.
Yeah, but that's also – but part of your rationale, Paul, I think, is also when you evaluate the stock of the offensive line.
Well, that's what it is.
If there was stock
that's what it is.
In the offensive line this year in terms of the prospects, I think you get to 23 and you see there's about five or six quality starters that you could take in round one, the philosophy probably changes.
The mixed reviews on that top of the class out of the combine in Indy is what really gives me pause to maybe not take an offensive lineman at 23. I'm not going to rule it out, folks. You know me. I'm a trenches guy. I will never rule it out. But I'm not heavily leaning in that direction anymore. I mean, especially if O.J. Howard should drop.
Listen, those things are going to happen, and changes the conversation.
And by the way, if O.J. Howard's drafted, he helps the blocking up front. So you get a lot of what you're looking for within an offensive line's improvement by adding a tight end who can block the crap out of the ball.
It's not an offensive lineman, but it's an extension of the
exactly.
offensive line. Before we wrap things up, the Giants did make it official. Sean Drone is officially a member of the New York Giants. He comes over from the San Francisco 49ers, was with them the last 2 years, so he'll add depth to the backfield. We'll talk a lot more about that signing on tomorrow's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow.
We're talking Washington tomorrow.
There you go. That's your
Huskies,
little
that is.
On Thursday's edition of BBKL. Have a good one. We'll speak to you tomorrow.